Oh, here we are. Here we are again. It's Roll Around the Barrel Vintage Baseball Podcast. You know what we do. We talk to vintage baseball players from border to border and coast to coast. And it's a very special day. One of my favorite days ever. And it hasn't even happened yet. But I already know. I have a co-host for the day. And I have an excellent guest. And it's not going to get better than this. If you listen to this podcast because of your affinity for vintage baseball, well, listen closely. Because I'm about to give you what you want. Ooh, you're going to get so much, you're not going to be able to take another trip of vintage baseball until you play this weekend. So first, let me introduce my co-host for the day, my friend, my compadre, my muse. It's Rudy Swamp Fox Frias. Rudy, how are you, my friend?
I am. After that introduction, I'm over the moon, and I'm just hoping not to screw up a good thing you got going.
Well, you can only add to it, so please do not go through the interview like you're going to screw up. You know, we got the chemistry, man. We're going to be okay. So let's bring in our guest from the Ohio Village Muffins. Everybody in the Midwest knows this guy has goodies in the closet. It is Tracy Martin. Tracy, nice to meet you. How are you doing today?
There we go. And, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
So Rudy and Tracy are in a pre-storm situation that's happening there. I just got light rain, so we might have technical difficulties throughout my big fat mouth run the whole time. So it won't matter. So here's what I'm going to do. Tracy, I don't know much about you, but like Rudy brought up earlier in our pre-interview, you have been posting some fantastic pictures. Rudy always knows who I'm going to interview. We're friends, and we go through this podcast thing together, seeing what each other's doing and all that stuff. And there's only been a couple of times where Rudy Frias has said, hey, listen, I got to be a part of that. I just have to be a part of that. He has so many nice things to say about you. He has so many stories with you. So I'm going to hand it over to Rudy to start off with how he met you and his relationship with you. Rudy?
Well, friends, let's go back to a magical time called the 90s. Tracy, we met, I was 10 years old when we met, and part of the Ohio Village Muffins, and I honestly, like, it's like I had a family full of uncles, like growing up in the Ohio Village Muffins, and there's so much, like I said, we were talking about these pictures and taking these trips down memory lane. How about you just talk about how you got introduced into the vintage baseball world in the 90s?
Well, guys, it really started in 1993, Rudy and Matthew. And I just so happened to hear a small little clip on the news about the season. The Ohio Village Muffins was getting ready to start at the Ohio Village. And so I thought, wow, that sounds really interesting. I'd see if I can make it out there and watch the game. And I'm sure I sat there intently, just, you know, focused and watching as you guys were playing and just taking in everything like a kid in a candy store. And one of the key components of our program is the crank, the interpreters that walk around, discuss the game with people, explain things to the people. And these involve a lot of the wives, the girlfriends, family members that aren't playing, and they will dress in period clothing and come around and greet the folks that are sitting there watching the games. And that's what happened to me. Marty Wells, wonderful lady, her husband John was tally keeper. She came over and talked to me and explained things, what was going on. And she actually brought up the fact that the Muffins were looking for players at the time and asked me if I'd be interested in playing. And I thought you had to try out. You had to be of a certain skill and quality of a ball player. And she said, oh, no, all you have to do is just love the game. And I'm like, well, I most certainly love the game. Mrs. Wells, and she said, well, let me hook you up with a couple of the captains and see if they can get you started and come out and practice with us. And, you know, we'll get you a uniform and you're ready to go. So really the rest is history.
That's one thing that stuck with me as, cause I was a kid, I couldn't play unless it was like a junior muffin event, but like the engagement that, like you said, everybody who, like, when the muffins traveled, yeah, they traveled with ball players, but then there were like five or six other people that would dress in the period clothing, walk around and engage with the cranks and the fans, and it was just this welcoming and inclusive environment, and it was I remember one of my favorite memories is like, so and if you're following along on the Facebook pages, friends, and you're following Martin's Baseball Museum or Tracy Martin, there was a time when you were quite the cover model for the Ohio Village Muffin. One might say the face of the Ohio Village Muffin. Could you talk about how that came about and some of those like tidbits?
Well, I've took a lot of razzing over the years for that. It just happened that first year, 1993. I hadn't even finished the muffin hat. I had one of the visiting team hats. It was a red hat with white stripes on it. And I was probably 2 or 3 months into the season, not even just a couple months. And just so happened that Spirit Magazine from Southwest Airlines had scheduled a photo shoot to do a story on the muffins, which Spirit Magazine, you know, travels all over the country. And these magazines are in every pocket, you know, the seat in front of you. And so I'm standing there with, along with the other guys, and just so happened the photographer, you know, pointed me out and said, hey, you ready? You know, we need somebody to come up here and pose for a batting stance. So I was nervous and really felt like I didn't qualify yet, but they took some pictures, and then he had me walk around with Charlie Trudeau and Jim Tootle and a couple of the other muffins and take some more pictures. And then when the magazine came out, there was this big full page picture of me. And so I've been getting a lot of heat for that. And then a couple other times there was some newspaper articles and other magazines, and just so happened that my mug was in there. And so that's how the cover boy title got.
Let me just say, having seen some of those other individuals, you were by far the most handsomest of the group. So the photographers knew what they were.
Been a few more gray hairs added in the last 30 years, I'll tell you that.
Rudy, you mentioned to me the other day that Tracy's the one who got you your start in something, some media, something or another. What were you talking about?
When Barrel Roller sent me the text message and says, I'm going to interview Tracy Martin, the first thing that I sent back was, he is the reason I made it on national television. In another life, I dabble in the theatrical arts, and, you know, you get agents. I've had like 4 agents ever since I've been college, and they try to get you print work, and they get you in commercials, and they're trying to get you on shows and everything like that. I moved from New York back to Columbus. I was auditioning and going through the process, Barrel Roller, over and over. And then I get a phone call from Tracy and says, hey, Mysteries at the Museum is going to do this thing, and I really think you could be Candy Cummings and be a part of it. And I was like, that's ridiculous. I can't even – none of my agents were able to get me on national TV. But Tracy Martin and Vintage Baseball got me what most actors covet. They try and work really hard to get their mug out there. And I'm forever in his debt for that. I mean, it's on my IMDb page, and it's in my resume. And it's definitely a conversational piece when I do audition. Thank you once again, Tracy.
It was my – Matthew, talking about that, the whole situation there with the Mysteries at the Museum, they contacted me about doing a segment on the in their show on the Travel Channel, and they wanted to focus on a particular item in my collection. And they had me send them a couple items that I had. I sent them a glove, an old baseball, and some different things. And one of the items they really hooked onto was this fingerless baseball glove. So they started doing some research on where that came from. How were gloves invented? Because we don't wear gloves playing vintage baseball. Gloves hadn't been invented yet. And they come about in their research finding this pitcher who pitched for the Brooklyn Stars, William Candy Cummings. And down through history and lore, he has been credited with throwing one of the first pitchers to throw a curveball. So they said, well, I think we're going to focus on this. We're going to focus on the glove, but we can't fly 18 actors to Columbus from New York to play a game. So, you know, it really defeats the purpose. We really need some way to put on a game. And I'm like, I've got the answer. I've got a vintage baseball team, and I'll contact some guys, and we'll reenact the game. So I contacted the people that I needed to. I contacted Jackie about helping me out with the uniforms and getting special bibs made for the Harvard team and the Brooklyn Stars. So me and my wife, we made belts, you know, special belts with those names of the teams on them. And so I started contacting people, and they said, well, you pick the people you think would be best for each one of these situations. We need Archie Bush, who is the batter against Candy Cummings in this first game, the first batter to see a curveball was Archie Bush. And so I instantly thought of Rudy, his personality, his baseball skills. And I knew that he was a good hurler on our team. You know, I reached out to him. You know, he accepted, and I'm so glad that he did because he did a fantastic job. He had the starring role. Rudy, thank you for accepting. And it turned out great. The segment was fantastic. They loved it. They came here. We drove out to the Ohio Village and filmed this reenactment, and it just turned out fantastic.
It was an amazing day.
I've seen this piece of work, and a baby-faced Rudy Frias is in this, I want to say, film or documentary. I have seen a piece of this. However, Rudy, is this before or after you were the face of Latino Bed Bath & Beyond?
This was before.
Oh, so this got you that gig too. Okay.
Like I said, when they sent me out on auditions and things like that, and they would see this credit, it got your foot more in the door. And I loved it.
Tracy, let me ask you, 30 years ago, you went to the Muffins, saw something about vintage baseball, you went to go check it out. Were you already into the collecting historic baseball artifacts at that time, or was it because of vintage baseball that started?
Well, actually, I already had that love and passion for collecting, Matthew. I started collecting really when I was 10 years old, buying packs of baseball cards for 10 cents. My brother-in-law would take us to the games in Cincinnati. I grew up in Dayton, an hour away. So I collected posters and pennants and baseball cards, and I had my room at home growing up decorated with these things. So I had that love of collecting already. I loved history too. I had this, you know, passion about history in general. But when I started playing with the Muffins and started hanging around some of the other ball players, Gentleman Jim Tootle, Big Bat Anderson, these guys who had a knowledge of the history of the game, and they started sharing that with me. And Rudy's dad, Rudy Sr., Frias, fantastic minds as far as the knowledge of the history of the game. So I started looking and doing more research, and I kind of got this crazy idea about putting together a collection that would show a timeline, an evolution of baseball equipment from the earliest gloves, the earliest baseballs, the earliest uniforms, and show that timeline, how it changed and evolved over the decades.
You're starting way back in the days, way before the internets, way before the phones, way before the eBay, way before any of that. So obviously you're going to ball games and you're collecting things from that. How are you getting your hands on other merchandise that you're not in front of physically?
anything and everything. I would go to yard sales, flea markets, antique shows, antique malls, word of mouth. I acquired some pieces just by people knowing that I collected that kind of stuff, and they would contact me. And so the more people that knew I collected these items, that was another avenue that I might be able to obtain a piece.
Rudy, you said you've been there before. Do you have a favorite piece you've seen at Tracy's Museum, the Martins Baseball Museum?
Come on, don't do this to me. It's like you're asking me to choose.
Yes, you are correct. I'm going to rephrase the question. Rudy, from your trip to the Martins Baseball Museum, is there anything that stands out?
You can see it. For our listeners out there, I understand you will get the visual app tasting here. The collection of uniforms. I'm a sucker for old baseball jerseys. Just, you're looking in the background here, and I could just sit there all day and just ask questions. And I mean, I'm sure Tracy would be obliged and answer the questions, but I'm fascinated with just, what team is that? Where, you know, talk about this uniform. I love his collection of all the uniforms. That's my pick. Tracy, being that the muffins are associated with the Ohio, at the time called the Ohio Historical Society. Now, were you ever able to like utilize that connection to do like research or any further, like get a inside information on things?
It's been a great connection with the Historical Society, Rudy, and History Connection. I've worked very closely with them, and they've actually asked me over the years to put on the exhibits and displays there at the Historical Society in the village to loan pieces. And I've also utilized the fantastic archives in the library upstairs to research an old scorecard that I have in my collection and some other items that I wouldn't be able to find that, because you mentioned the uniforms, Rudy. A lot of times the pieces I acquire, there's no information that comes along with them. So I've got to do that homework and that background and the research, which I really love doing, because I've really come across some great pieces. One of the neat pieces I've acquired was this uniform jersey, and it had a stamp on it, the back, a Hollywood costume company in Hollywood, California, and had a name written on the tag and on the inside. And I didn't recognize the name. I Googled it to see if he was a ball player, and it wasn't a ball player. So the only thing that kept coming up was this movie with it had Billy Dee Williams and Richard Pryor, called Bingo Long and His Traveling All-Stars, 1976. And it turns out that one of those random things that, you know, you just find out and that I never would have, you know, without doing that research. So any little thing that I can find on a piece to help me with some information about it. I don't always, am always that fortunate. You know, but that part of the research is very fun. I really enjoy it.
Okay, Rudy, let's just pelt him with questions about his museum pieces. I'll go first. Here we go. You just said that you have to do all the research for all these pieces that you find. Name the most mysterious piece that you have that you didn't find anything about.
Wow, that's a fantastic question. I've got a jersey right now that's on loan to the Cincinnati Reds. It's at the Cincinnati Reds Hall of Fame and Museum. And they are doing an exhibit called the Then and Now exhibit. They have about 150 of my pieces on exhibit down there. And that particular jersey is a Civil War era, bib front shield type of jersey. It's the earliest jersey that I have, the 1860s, 1870s at the latest. And I've tried to do research on that. I would love to find a team, a photo of a team that might have that similar type of jersey. And, but that's one that has eluded me. The one item that I do have that, has a great, background and history behind it is had a gentleman contact me about a baseball he had that supposedly, Babe Ruth signed for him. You know, I hear a lot of those stories, you know, most of them are, you know, the ball isn't quite authentic or it's a facsimile signature. But this gentleman, his name was John, and he said, oh, yeah, and John, he's still with us today. He's 85, 86 years old. Said that he played American Legion baseball down in Chillicothe. And his dad was a coach of this team. And American Legion ball had just got started in the late 40s. And at the time, Babe Ruth was the ambassador for Major League Baseball, for American Legion baseball. Babe Ruth, he was in the twilight of his life, but he still loved being around kids and helping the youth in baseball. So John's team won the area championship that year. And that year, they were invited to Crosley Field in Cincinnati for an all-star game of the championship teams. And it just so happened that Babe Ruth flew there with his wife, and he was greeted at the airport by the mayor. They gave him the key to the city, and Babe Ruth signed one ball for each team. When John's dad was the coach of the team, so he kept the ball. As years went on, John had a family, went to work. His mother passed away in 1999. He was going through her things and opened a drawer and found that ball that she had put away for 50 years. So John was getting older. He was wanting to sell some of his items. Back to me, he wanted the ball to go somewhere where somebody would appreciate it and take care of it. He had had many other offers. And so I was able to obtain this ball from John. So a fantastic background, a fantastic story. And I keep that ball in my collection as long as I'm alive.
And that ball is the profile pic, right, of Martin's Baseball Museum. If you find it on Facebook, it's prominently displayed and unmistakable. Babe Ruth. It's like, oh my gosh. I can't help but, you know, going down to Cincinnati, growing up in Dayton, I'm assuming Reds fan. I think it's a safe assumption.
Yes, sir.
Okay. How many members of the Big Red Machine have you interacted
with? Pretty much all of them. I've been very fortunate over the years. I have baseballs and pictures and bats and magazines with all the Big Red Machine. I've met all of them, the Grade 8, multiple times. I've been fortunate enough, along with another muffin, Charlie Trudeau, he was so gracious to offer a spot on a fantasy camp team here in Columbus at the Cooper Stadium one year. And George Foster was on that fantasy camp, the pro squad. And Ferguson Jenkins and Lynn Barker, who pitched a perfect game with the Indians. And Otis Nixon and John Stearns, who's a catcher with the Mets. And just, you know, here I am hanging out with these guys, a Hall of Famers and a perfect game pitcher, you know, and just it was fantastic to be a part of that. And I don't know how it happened, but I end up winning an MVP in the second game on a Saturday. You know, it just it was one of the biggest thrills of my life. But yeah, to answer the question about the Big Red Machine, and one of the things about having this connection with different teams, and I was fortunate enough to also do another exhibit with the Cincinnati Reds when they honored Johnny Bench. They did an exhibit of his artifacts that his mom and dad had kept, all of his trophies and uniforms. And the Reds contacted me and asked, they knew I had a evolution timeline of catching equipment. And they borrowed that for the exhibit, and they had an entire wall devoted to my equipment that showed the timeline and evolution of catching. And then at the very end, they had one of his sets of catching equipment from the 70s, which was a thrill because he was my favorite player as the Red. So that was quite an honor.
It's really, you just triggered a memory for me, because I was in the stands for some of those fantasy camp games, because and I'm going to give him a shout out. Ian's one of the many feathers in Ian's cap is he hit a home run off of Ferguson Jenkins.
Wow.
And it was a line drive out to right field, and he never stopped running. And so, yeah, that's really amazing. Because in the background, for our listeners out there, Rose, Griffey, Morgan, and Bench prominently displayed in posters in the background, and that's what that was the genesis of my question.
All right, let's go back to when you start collecting items. I want you to tell me about one of the items that you first got with the intention of it being part of a collection as opposed to just something you were doing for the love.
Probably be some old catcher's mitts. I really loved, because of the connection with Johnny Bench being my favorite player, the catcher. I was a catcher when I was played Little League. And, you know, I picked up a couple old mitts and actually have them right. I can grab them right here.
Yes.
This is my favorite part.
And yes, mine too. I've been waiting for him to grab something.
here's a couple of the old mitts. This one's from about 1890 time period. And this one's from a little later, about 1920s, a big deep pocket. And the catchers back then, one thing I tell people about the catcher's equipment is that the catcher's mitts, you couldn't squeeze and close like you can the ones today. They weren't flexible. They didn't have that deep pocket that trapped the ball. Catchers had to use their bare hand to trap the ball when it went into the mitt. So they would stand at a ready position with their bare hand exposed. And we was up in Mansfield at the Reformatory here in Ohio and playing a match. And this gentleman come up to me after the match, and he was an elderly gentleman, very nice, but he showed me his hand. And he said, "You see that, young man?" And I said, "Yes, sir." I thought he had arthritis real bad. He said, "I was a catcher." He said, "Back then, catchers would get their fingers broken frequently. But his hand was so bent and mangled from catching. But he was proud of that. That was like a badge of honor." And that was really neat to be able to talk to him about his experience as a catcher and hear his story. But the catcher's mitts is one of the first pieces that I wanted to focus on and start that catching timeline.
Anybody wants to see information on Martin's Baseball Museum, you can go to facebook.com/Martin's Baseball Museum. Just as simple as that. You're going to see some incredible pictures. When you see this Zoom, because we're releasing this as an audio medium first, we will release the Zoom video medium in the future, hopefully in the short future. I guess it's up to Rudy. But the pictures are outstanding. I mean, I want to come here. Rudy, before you ask your question, I have to ask, Tracy, how can people come and see this stuff?
It's pretty much on an invite basis right now. I still have a full-time job. I work 60 hours a week. So up until the point when I can get to the point where I can retire and hopefully at one time move into a larger building to put on an actual business where people can come into at their leisure. It's on an invite type of basis. People contact me frequently and ask if they can set up a time to come and see it and talk to me. And I try to be as great as I can with my time and my career. I love sharing information with folks. So most of the time it is other vintage players or a lot of the media. I've had a lot of media come here and do stories, the local media, newspaper, and TV. And they get a big kick out of it. They come in here intending to do a story, and before you know it, they're standing around for 2 or 3 hours talking.
Sure.
You know, and they're like, "I've got to get back to the studio," you know, invite, contact me through Facebook, and we'll do our best to try to accommodate.
I don't know if it was stated, or I don't want to brush over it if it wasn't stated, but this maze exists in your home, in the basement of your home, Tracy. When you loan out a piece, or when someone contacts you and you have to send a piece out, what is the transportation process like? What is sending a piece out? I'm assuming you just don't throw it in a cardboard box and it's gone. Walk us through that.
Yeah, well, the Reds have, I've been fortunate enough to do 4 exhibits with Cincinnati Reds and become very friendly with the curators down there and the historians down there. And they travel up here. They bring them. Meticulously crate everything up safely. Everything is tagged and marked, and I know it's secured and safe with them. When the Columbus Clippers opened up Huntington Park, I was fortunate enough to do the first 6 months prior to the park opening. I worked with Joe Santry, the team historian, and Ken Schnocke, the general manager, which was a great experience. on the displays and all of the beautiful photographs and pictures that they have around that park. And I still have some items down there on display with the Clippers. I've done exhibits. I've loaned pieces to the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. I've loaned pieces to the Dayton University of Dayton, and so many other different venues. It's just a real thrill. Different museums, different historical societies. It could be from a one-day exhibit where I will pack some things up and go down and do a PowerPoint or a talk or just set up a display like at COSI here in Columbus. And I have been there. Jim will talk about the history of game, and I'll set up a mixture of people with the knowledge. It could be a person like a historian like Jim Tootle with the knowledge of the game. It could be someone like me that has the actual hands-on pieces to show people. And it could be other players, you know, that have knowledge of different. That's one thing that's been fun is the Phoenix Bat Company out of baseball that they can be very proud of.
That's amazing.
My next question is, your house is on fire. Your basement's on fire. You have time to run down to get one item and get it out. What is that item?
It's probably going to be the ball.
Okay. The ball is already destroyed. You can't take the ball. That was too obvious. The ball is destroyed. What is the next item?
It'd probably be Rudy's favorite, the uniforms. I would grab as many. I have my uniforms on mannequins, so I'd probably just rip them off the mannequins and put them in my arms and try to get them upstairs. The uniforms are very rare. Especially the ones from the 19th century. They're hard to find. The ones I and one thing, Matthew, I'll talk about as far as the collecting goes. When I first came up with this idea, put together this collection that showed the evolution of the equipment in every aspect of the with the bats, the gloves, the baseballs, the uniforms, old photographs and things like that. A lot of collectors really had a focal point on their collecting. They only collected autographs, or they only collected gloves, or they only collected bats. And I'm not sure if it's because of me sharing my collection openly with other collectors that the interest has grown, where there's a lot more collectors now that do what I do. So because of the number of people that are collecting these items now, it's harder and harder to find the really nice vintage pieces. And needless to say, it's those old uniforms from the 19th century are pretty rare and pretty special.
Speaking of like uniforms, well, the pieces in general, are there any pieces in your collection that, I mean, I obviously I'm not a collector or know the lingo, but are they white glove pieces where if you touch them, you need like white gloves? Like, do you have any pieces like that? Or like, are they pretty much like structurally sound pieces?
Most of the items are structurally sound. I would say if anybody, the older baseballs, I would recommend someone being very careful handling the baseballs because the oil on your fingers and your hands could actually rub off and seep into the old leather. And it will spot, you know, and over time. And if you're not careful, you know, that has a tendency to tarnish, you know. And some of the older autographs, depending on the pen that a player would autograph with or how hard, they have to be careful with that. And but the baseballs, I would say, are the most sensitive of the collectible pieces. The gloves, I do maintain the leather gloves and the bats in my collection. I will oil them. I will put some leather conditioner on the gloves and oil the bats. It doesn't hurt them. It really helps maintain the flexibility and softness so the gloves don't get dry. And the bats, it just really shines them up real good and gives them a good good look. And other than that, the rest of the uniforms, I leave them alone. I don't wash anything, you know. And a lot of people say, well, it's stained or it has some dirt on it or there might be a mustard stain on it. I leave it the way it is. You know, that's great. To me, that's part of the character of that piece, to have that dirt stain on the knee of a, you know, baseball pants or something like that, you know, or to tobacco juice on a catcher's mitt where it's darkened over the years, you know, where catchers would just spit tobacco juice in the palm of the mitts. You know, it's just that's part of the character of the piece.
If we're calling mustard character, then I have a lot of pieces you might be interested in. once again, we're talking to Tracy Martin of the Ohio Village Muffins. So much baseball, man. I mean, you have forgotten more than I've ever known. That's a fact. I can't wait to meet you in person and talk more about this. Are you going to be at the Ohio Cup this year by chance?
Probably will be. As far as I know, we'll be in town. And yeah, we'll be there. You have open invitation to come here. I'm probably about 20 minutes away out of Village.
Yeah, I'm coming. I'm coming.
If any of the ball players that are going to be at the Ohio Cup this year, maybe we can work something out. Since I know the schedule is busy on the weekend, maybe that Friday evening we can have a bunch of folks over and have a cookout and open up the basement to everybody. How does that sound?
Okay, but the basement has to be opened and closed before the alcohol opens. Isn't that a rule? you go through and then that's it. And then, cookout begins.
That's common sense.
Tracy, your whole life, it seems, revolves around baseball because I don't know you. I don't know how much Rudy knows about you other than baseball. I'm interested. What do you do with your wife when she's so tired of baseball?
That's a great question. And I guess if we can go back when we first bought the house, we lived here 21, almost 22 years. And we were looking for a place to have a full basement, needless to say, because when we first met, I was living in a home and it was a big two-story home and I was all by myself. And she come in and I had baseball things in the living room and in the kitchen and in the hallway, even in the bathroom, I had baseball pictures hanging up in there. And she said, you know, when we get a place of our own, we'll find some place where you can put your whole collection in one spot. And that's what I always wanted. I thought that was fantastic. Here, she thought she was, you know, getting the deal out of it, but I was, because when we found this house, it has this big, huge, full basement. It's finished, and I've been able to pretty much do whatever I wanted to down here with my collection. And believe it or not, I've outgrown it. I could probably double the space because I have things on the ceiling and leaning against the walls and in display cases and showcases and hanging up, and it's I'm out of room.
So I did a podcast. I was talking to Eric Miklich, and we were talking about how there needs to be a vintage baseball Hall of Fame, and we just need somebody to come along and do it. I see a building in your future. Don't you?
I'm looking probably about 5 more years of working. Been at my job for 38 years now. So another 5 years, and I might look into something like that. That sounds like an amazing adventure and for the next chapter of my life.
Where did you take your wife on your first date?
Our first date, actually, she invited me over to her apartment and she cooked me dinner. She made dinner, steak and baked potato.
How'd she do?
It was fantastic. And we went to Dairy Queen for dessert afterwards.
Walking distance or did you have to drive?
Not too far.
How long into the dating process was it before you took her to a baseball game?
Probably about 2 months. We flew to Chicago. She was a Cubs fan because of Mark Grace and Ryan Sandberg. And I surprised her and we went to Wrigley Field and we flew to Chicago. And that was our first game together.
Was that her first trip to Wrigley Field?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Oh, deal was done. Deal was done.
Yeah. I was pissed. That is such a smooth operator move. Wow. I'm going to make sure my wife never hears this episode.
I made sure that I got tickets right behind the Cubs dugout. So when they come, Mark Grace and Ryan Sandberger, they're warming up before the game. And I'm like, honey, look, you know.
Jeez. Killed it. Tell me a hobby that you have non-baseball related. Is there one? Do you do anything besides baseball?
Person, yeah. My wife loves flowers and gardening, and we have a beautiful yard. So I help maintain the yard. We do a lot out here in the yard. I have a beautiful family. I have 4 children and grandchildren, great grandchildren, and from 3 weeks old on up to 27. So they keep me very busy, and I'm very fortunate, very blessed, and I just enjoy life. We also love to travel. We travel all over the world when we can, and so we enjoy that time together. So, you know, I try to create a perfect mixture with my passion and the things that she loves to do, and that seems to work out pretty good.
So tell me about one of the vacations or travelings you went out of the United States, somewhere that really sticks in your memory.
Well, we went to Paris. It was beautiful to see the Eiffel Tower, and she loves Monet, and we traveled down to Monet's home in Giverny and in France, and that was beautiful. And we also went to Peru. We went up to Machu Picchu in Peru, and just amazing ruins up there at Machu Picchu. And we've been down to Chichen Itza in Mexico. So I love I love history as well. I love the old ancient artifacts and locations like that. We also, you know, she loves the beach and she loves Hawaii. So we've been to Hawaii a few times, and it's beautiful out there, the islands.
Is anybody living a better life than Tracy Martin? I think I have to ask that question at this time.
It's solidified. My wife will never hear this episode because she'll be like, every summer. Oh man, that's amazing.
I've been very blessed. I sometimes I wonder if I deserve it. But my life has been amazing, and I've always tried to live life at its fullest. When my time comes, you know, and I'm laying there and, you know, taking my last breath, I want to be able to look back and, like, you know, have no regrets. And so far, I've lived up to that, and I intend on doing the same.
Wow. Has there ever been a moment in your travels where you were surprised? Because, you know, like, I'm not saying you travel and your wife is like, oh, we're traveling to get away from baseball. But, like, has there ever been a time when you're traveling someplace and baseball happened to find you? Like, whether it's like, or you're down at Machu Picchu and they're like, oh, and there was a baseball element to the Aztecs and the Mayans. Anything like that ever happened?
Well, actually, we was at Chichen Itza and in Mexico, and the pyramid is amazing there. There was a field off to the side. We had a guide. We hired a guide to explain things about the different buildings that was around the location. And this one field he was talking about where they actually played sport and game on this field. And there was images into the car that they had been carved into the stone and all, where they actually used, like, probably a rock or something, but as a ball or something, where they would roll it and hit it with a stick. It wasn't baseball, but it was like a stick and ball type of game, you know, and it was really cool and really amazing. You know, I thought that was neat. Wasn't necessarily baseball as we know it, Rudy, but stick and ball game, you know.
Yeah, that's baseball to me, stick and ball game. Growing up in the Muffins Barrel Roller, so I could never play, I would be off to the side field where the scoreboard is, and my brothers would do the same thing. We'd sneak a ball away from the bench, and we'd take their little tiny kid bat, and we'd have our own little stick and ball baseball games, because, you know, we couldn't take full swings because the village was packed with people. And I didn't want to be responsible for hitting anybody with a baseball. So that resonates with me, of the ball rolling on the ground and trying to hit it.
I was going to really be talking about in our travels, not necessarily abroad with baseball, but one of the things we do try to work in with our travels in the United States, we try to catch up on a ball game whenever we can. If we went to Kansas City and went to Royal Stadium, we take tours of stadiums. We love to do that. So we we've been to Boston and New York and San Diego and Tampa and Chicago, of course, and other locations where we actually, even though we're on vacation, we try to work in a day to go to a game or take a tour of a stadium. And St. Louis, you know, just all over. There's so many beautiful ballparks around the country. We enjoy doing that as well.
Real quick, out of all the stadiums and games that you've been to and seen, which one has food that you still talk about or think about today? Like the concessions or anything
food.
Like that? Which one would you say? Yeah.
Food.
I would say, and this is my wife's favorite as well, Boston. They shut down all the streets around Fenway, and just the atmosphere, the smell, it's amazing there. The vendors are lined up one right after another behind the Green Monster out there in the alley, and I definitely would probably have to go with Boston as the best food.
So if the weather holds up for Saturday, I'm going to be attending. Well, I'm going down to Heritage Village Museum for a day full of baseball, taking the podcast down there. But that night, I'll be attending my first Reds game at the Great American Ballpark. Do you have a recommendation for a piece of food that I can just shove in my face and feel like I'm at a baseball game, besides a hot dog?
La Rosa's Pizza.
Okay. Somebody else said that earlier today. Yeah.
La Rosa's Pizza. I would recommend that. Skyline Chili. I know that's a hot dog, but Skyline Chili is also a favorite down there in Cincinnati. But I would definitely try a slice of La Rosa's Pizza. It's delicious. Go to the museum and go up and you see some pieces up on the second floor.
No, I'm absolutely going to the museum. Where do you suggest I sit?
Third base, probably third base side, about halfway up, right around the bag, third base bag, about halfway up. That's a good spot.
Beauty. Beautiful.
I love it.
Rudy, do you have another question before we hit him with the old pepper?
Yes, and it's about the collection. Well, actually, it's two parts. Let me just say first, I love how some of your collection is displayed. Like, growing up as a kid, and I assume this is true for both of you, like baseball card and comic book shops were a big deal for me, and walking in and just like putting my hands on the glass case and looking at all of the cards that they had. And as I, you know, seen in your basement and scroll on Facebook, I love the way you display. It makes me nostalgic. Like I'm a kid back in the 80s and the 90s at the card shop, looking for, you know, a card that I don't have, or, you know, price checking a card. But I just wanted to say that. But my question is, how many of your baseball games, your electronic baseball games, or your baseball board games, how many of those have you played? Have you played all of them? Do you test them out?
Quite a few of them I have played and gotten out, and I leave them. I love to display them, so they're out. Some of them are, not all of them are complete. So the ones that aren't complete, you know, they're really interesting and really fun. And I probably have about 50 different board games and electronic games.
Wow.
I love the graphics on those old boxes. I have some old board games, small, McLaughlin Company made some of them. They're smaller, that date back to the 1890s. They're a little fragile, but yeah, some of the more modern ones, like photoelectric football or photoelectric baseball, I have, and some of the old, you remember the football games, that the vibrating football games with the players that kind of, there was baseball version of that. Oh. And I have two or three examples of as well.
I did not know that. Oh, I got another baseball question. Listen, I'm going to keep asking questions. You bring this on yourself, Tracy, by being such a nice guy and being such a fountain of information. You bring this on yourself. You're a young child, and you're in a baseball situation in your neighborhood. Nobody can get together 17 other people. Nobody can have a full baseball game when they're a kid in a non organized situation. What were the baseball games like in your neighborhood, and what were some of the rules you had to use to make those games happen?
That's a great question, Matthew. Well, actually, that happened. I was fortunate enough to live in a neighborhood where we had like a sandlot field behind my house. It just so happened that I was the person that was elected to keep the equipment. And my brother-in-law, Dennis, he was in the Army. When he came home, he had this old duffel bag that he had kept his clothes in when he was in the Army, and he'd give it to me to keep the bats and the gloves and bases in. So I would lug all these bats and bases over to the sandlot. But you're right, we didn't have 18 players, so we would have to share gloves. So when one guy would come in from the field, the other guy was going out, we would flip the glove to the next guy coming in and out. Also, we used the, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the term ghost player, ghost man on second, ghost runner on third, where we may only had three or four or five players. And if the bases was loaded, somebody had to come in and bat. So we would have a ghost runner on third base. And so that way, if the runner on second scored, then that runner, that ghost runner automatically scored from, you know, from third. So we would do that. That's some of the different rules.
The ghost runners were always the fastest guys on the team. They're like, nobody else was going to score on that. How did your ghost runner score? Okay.
Another rule I just thought of we had was if we didn't have enough players to play the outfield, we might have a first baseman, a shortstop, and if you're lucky, maybe a second baseman, maybe two outfielders, and right field would be out. So you couldn't hit the ball to right field. If you hit the ball to right field, it was an out because we didn't have enough players to cover the whole outfield.
Wow.
Yeah.
Way to punish those backside hits.
I had to play by that rule a lot when I was a kid too. Right field always seemed to be out.
Yeah.
Okay, Tracy, what I'm going to do, and I'm sure you've never listened to a single episode of this show, but maybe you will in the future. go back into the archives. There's some names in there you're going to recognize, like Big Bat Don Anderson, Marjorie Adams, so many. Bobby Valentine. I interviewed Bobby Valentine. I have to throw that out every time. Am I too much when I do that, Rudy? I have no choice. I have to say it.
No, I'm surprised you didn't open the show with it. I'm surprised.
Although I've bugged to pick with Bobby Valentine. I was at an autograph signing. Mickey Mantle was there to sign autographs, and Bobby Valentine held the lineup. He cut in front of everybody. I think he was the manager of the Reds at the time. And he cut in front of everybody and took probably 24 items up there for Mickey Mantle to sign and stood there and talked to him for 15 minutes while everybody was standing there waiting. But it was kind of neat. I did get the chance to meet Mickey Mantle and shake his hand and get an autographed ball from him. So,
of course you did.
It turned out good.
Of course you did. So what I do right now, Tracy, we're gonna end the show. I'm going to be in your basement, come Ohio Cup. You're not going to have to call me or wait for me to come over. I'm going to be sleeping on your lawn, waiting for you to get up. We'll have some coffee, and then we'll go downstairs. But absolutely, I don't care what you do with everybody else at the Ohio Cup. But me, I'm coming. But what I do now is I do a segment called Giving You the Old Pepper, and these are all just quick questions with quick answers. And we just learn a little bit more about you in a quick way. So here we go.
Okay.
Tracy, what is your second favorite color?
Red.
Oh, I said second favorite because I thought red was going to be the first. What's your first favorite color?
Blue's my favorite. Always is.
You got me again. How about a memorable baseball injury you got during a game?
It would have to be my hamstring I pulled in the first season I played, just a couple weeks into the season, and it wasn't concentrating on stretching before the game, which I learned my lesson. And when I pulled that hamstring, I'll never forget that thing.
Creamy or crunchy peanut butter?
Crunchy. Jiffy.
How many holes in a pair of socks before you throw them away?
Pretty much your whole foot's coming through.
What is your Mount Rushmore of Cincinnati Reds players? I don't want honorable mentions or who's just outside that four. I just want your personal top four.
Okay. I would say Johnny Bench, Tech Lazuski, Effa Rixey.
Oh.
Frank Robinson. Unfortunately, one of the worst trades in baseball, but Frank Robinson was a great player and should have been with the Reds his whole career, but he went to Baltimore and ended up winning a Triple Crown.
And that brings me to this. Name a pet peeve of yours.
Laziness.
Yeah, you work over 60 hours a week. What was the first car you had?
67 Chevy Impala.
What is your favorite summer beverage?
Iced tea. Sweet.
What was your first concert you ever went to?
The Who.
Now this is the last question. I'm going to hold you to it. Past or present, name an overrated Major League Baseball player.
Jose Canseco.
Oh, yeah. It's low-hanging fruit right there, Tracy. Yeah.
I just remember the ball bouncing over his head and over the fence for a home run.
That was ridiculous. Now he takes people's money to go on a hunt for Bigfoot. So.
Interesting.
How do I know these dumb things? I don't know.
Bigfoot's real, though, so he'll probably.
It's people like me that have to exist with facts like the Bigfoot search with Jose Canseco that make people like you look so smart, Tracy. Without people like me, you don't look so smart. You realize this, right? Tracy, I want to thank you for being on the show.
Scotland is looking for. Hang on. I think we missed something. Breaking news. We're going to Scotland?
Yeah, we're going to Scotland next year, so I'm going to look for the Loch Ness Monster. So Bigfoot's not that bad.
Nessie, Scotland. Oh, haggis. That's all I know.
That's where my family's from, Scotland.
I did one of those 23andMe DNA tests, and my whole life I've been thinking that I'm German and a Hungarian, and it turns out that I'm Scottish-Irish, and I don't know what to do about it. It's weird. Do I wear a kilt? I don't know.
Half a kilt.
Tracy, thanks for being on the show. Appreciate you so much. I've learned so much that you're never going to get rid of me for the rest of your life now. You know this, right? We're friends. Where'd you go, Tracy? We're friends. You'll never leave.
No, thank you very much. I just wanted to share one more item from my collection.
Please share 17 more.
This was a gift from my wife and son a few years back for my birthday. So,
Oh, yes. I think I've seen a picture of this.
That is amazing. For the listener out there, Tracy is holding up an amazing replica bobblehead. He is the bobblehead. It says Tracy Martin on the bottom. He's in his muffin uniform. Striking that classic Tracy Martin pose that you would see on Spirit magazine. Oh, so good.
Yeah, that's a collector's item in itself, a collector's item. Once again, Tracy, thank you so much. Rudy, as always, a pleasure to do any vintage baseball things with you. I could see why you were so excited about having this gentleman on the podcast. Parting words?
My favorite smile, like from the skin that we logged on to the Zoom. Like, this is a good feeling of hurt because I have just enjoyed every second of this. Thank you. Thank you for letting me be here, Barrel Roller.
Absolutely. This is going to be a good episode, you think? Tracy, stay there so we can say goodbye to you like gentlemen would. As I say to everybody out there in Roller Altabarrel land, is that a thing? Lots of stuff going on this summer. You guys are going to get so much vintage baseball out of this platform. You're not going to believe the things that are coming up. I don't even believe them. I don't even know what they are. That's how much I don't believe them. So have a Have a good week, everybody. Have a good weekend. Get out there, strike well, and we'll see you next week.